Hey, great podcast for you today. Megyn Kelly, Mark Geis, he's Oz from the Benghazi nightmare, otherwise known as 13 Hours. Talk to him about the flashbacks that maybe he had while watching this all unfold now in Afghanistan. We have updates on that, also what Biden is doing, what the State Department is doing, and of course, a dramatic reading from Lizzo. Where the hell my phone? All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
In the old days, you had to be on one of the three networks, or you had to be on the ABC radio network, and that was pretty much it. Now there are so many vehicles, and you can start them yourselves, as Megyn Kelly did, our guest. She started the Megyn Kelly Show on podcast. She's been through the networks, and now she is joining us on Triumph, which is the Sirius XM channel that we are on. She follows our program now every day at noon Eastern. Welcome to the program, Megyn Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. It's so good to be together again.
Yeah,
I know. In this moment and in the more macro sense on Triumph.
So I have to tell you, I listen to your podcast almost every day. Stu does too. We were just talking about your podcast from yesterday. It was you're just doing a great job. I have to ask you, why add more hours to your day?
You know what? I didn't. What I did was basically move the podcast to a live radio show, so it's all one and the same now. As you know, I'm the mother of three kids under the age of 12, so there's only so many hours in the day.
Right.
And one of the reasons I left Fox News was to actually see them and raise my own kids, so I didn't want to do 2 hours of radio and 2 hours of podcasting, so this is perfect for me. It folds them all into one, and now people can sort of hear me do the podcast live without a net, which, as you know, is kind of exciting, kind of fun, and I get to take calls, which is something I've never done before with my audience.
So, Megyn, I saw in an interview that you said you left your son's schools, your son's school, because the boys were asked weekly if they're still sure they were boys.
Yep. Can I tell you about this story?
Yeah, please.
So I've talked a lot about my son's school that I left, and I loved this school. It's an amazing school. And we were really sad that it took the turn that it took. Oh, it's gone dark just for drama.
Yeah.
What we found out from our son, first of all, when he was in third grade, we found out that they unleashed a 3-week experimental transgender education program on these boys with inappropriate videos. The kids were confused. These are 8 and 9 year olds, Glenn. They don't know. They have no idea what the school is even talking about with the trans thing. And they got really in depth with really in your face videos. And then parents complained. And the school did something it hasn't done in its 400 year history, which was they apologized. Even they realized they had done wrong. Then I said to my son, a year later, so how did they ever round back to the trans thing? Like whatever happened with, and he's like, every week. I'm like, what? He said, they bring it up every week. I said, how? He said, well, they managed to work into a lot of the conversations that, you know, in some places there are 100, they believe there are 100 genders. How many people here still feel confident that they're a boy? Do you still feel sure you're a boy? I said, how often do they ask you that? He said, about once a week. I'm like, Doug, so I said to my husband, we're out of here. This is not support. This is not non-bullying. This is indoctrination, and it's deeply confusing to the children and wrong.
So, you know, I've heard this story before, and I haven't heard you answer. Are they still sure they are boys? I mean,
they're 100% boys.
So what are you doing? Because isn't New York, I mean, that's all New York seems to be now. I mean, because if it's happening in Texas and happening in Oklahoma, I mean, it's got to be at every school in New York City.
It's styled under the auspices of non-bullying, right? And so that's why they parade girls who were never expressing any gender confusion up on stage because they're going through a tough time and suddenly they say they're trans, that they're trans boys. They parade them up on stage at these all-girls schools and they get snaps. right? Like you're going to celebrate this, even though in 80% of the cases, it's a passing phase. It's the result of something the girl's going through. It used to be anorexia, it used to be cutting. And now some of these girls are choosing to say they have gender confusion because it's trendy. And the difference between those two things is you don't cut off your breasts when you're anorexic. Right. Now you have other physical problems, but there are reasons parents are putting their kids in the hospitals to solve that, not to feed it.
Right.
We don't celebrate a girl who is clearly thin, who goes on stage and says, I think I'm fat. Nobody's giving snaps for that. And so the whole ideology has turned support, non-bullying, kindness, friendship, allyship on its head.
Well, you have the there's a new study out now. Transgender mortality rate much higher than the regular population. So people who have had transgender surgery, they're even worse off than the people who have just gender dysphoria.
Glenn, we have trans people in our family, and one who's rather close to our family. And this person had the full transition, the surgery and everything, and really wound up saying it didn't solve my problems. It created more of them.
Right.
It created more. All the things, you know how it is. We all have unhappinesses in our life. We all have things that we lament or that depress us. I think for a lot of trans people, people who think they're trans, they view the surgery, their transition, you know, the living life as the opposite sex, as the answer to those things that we all suffer from. But it's not the answer to all those problems. And in fact, it can create a lot of new problems that are now irreversible if you have the surgery.
So here's the really scary thing. This is happening now because of social media. It's happening with girls who never were having this
Correct.
Problem. And it's happening with mainly girls that are doing all kinds of things to the body. The doctors aren't allowed to say, well, now, wait a minute, let's slow down. Let's talk about it. How about some counseling? And so they're going through this surgery, and it's caused by social media, many people believe, at least for the numbers that are happening. This is criminal, absolutely criminal.
The absolute surrender of the medical community to this insanity is a scourge on this nation. It's disgusting what's happening with our doctors. There are people who are legitimately transgender, who have gender dysphoria. And for those people, we should be supportive and they should get the care that they need. But what we've done instead is taken everyone who expresses any sort of gender confusion and said, you're trans, you're trans. And we have our psychiatrists doing this. Whereas instead of probing, what's happening in your family? Are you going through a divorce? Are you suffering from bullying? Have you been in the target? A lot of these girls, they're overweight. They have acne. They're not popular. Maybe they're on the spectrum. That's sadly been the case in some of these instances where instead of going with an actual diagnosis of being someplace on the autism spectrum, they get a diagnosis of, oh, you're trans. And parents instead are saying, oh, we'll take that. Okay, that's like a trendy thing that the kid can get snaps for, as opposed to being mildly autistic. It's crazy. And the thing is, Glenn, the medical community, not only do they say yes, affirm, but once you prescribe puberty blockers and then testosterone to a young girl who's suddenly saying she's a boy, she's infertile. She cannot have children. The fact that we're doing this so willy-nilly in the name of allyship or, you know, support is it's abusive.
It's all criminal. Bull crap. I'm so sick of the allyship and the all of this bull crap. We're over in the Middle East, and we have saved homosexuals. We have saved women. We have saved children. And at every step of the way, where's the National Organization of Women? Where's the Me Too movement? Where's the LGBTQI movement? Where are they? They're nowhere to be found. It's a lie. These civil rights organizations that claim to be leading civil rights, they're bogus. It's a sham. All of it is a sham.
You and I both know they might be there to help you if you're a liberal Democrat.
Yes.
Maybe. Not even necessarily. Look at Tara Reid, lifelong liberal Democrat, accused Joe Biden, went to Time's Up, was basically told to pound sand because that organization with Anita Dunn running their communications was tied up with Joe Biden. So they lied to her and said, oh, we never take a case that involves a politician. Well, it wasn't true. And now that organization has completely been, it's fallen apart. I mean, the entire board has resigned now. The head of that company or that organization was helping Andrew Cuomo instead of the accusers. They're corrupt. They're there to cozy up to power, not to fight it. And they certainly have no interest in helping somebody who has an R after their name. That's why Caitlyn Jenner, who, by the way, is coming on my show today with Larry Elder. That'll be fun.
That's great.
Why she's hated by them. You would think Caitlyn Jenner, she's the most famous trans person in the world. They can't stand her.
Right.
Not because she hasn't spoken out on trans issues, but because she's a conservative Republican.
Right. So, Megan, how is this? Are we making progress? I mean, I feel like the world is absolutely on fire. The world I described where everyone said I was nuts, it's not going to happen, is the world we're living in now. It's the beginning of that world. And I do have some hope because I've seen average people stand up and say, I'm not playing this game anymore. I'll just do it myself. And I think there is a greater desire universally for the truth and just not, I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to be an ally with things that are not true.
Yeah.
Are we getting better, worse? Where are we in this cycle, do you think?
I don't think we're doing better on the trans front, I have to say. I think we're still stuck in the midst of a crisis in understanding how to deal with that. I think on the racialization of the nation, I feel like people are fighting back now. That's been so prevalent in our schools with the CRT and the diminishing of Black people because of their skin color and the shaming of white people because of theirs. I think parents are fighting back on that. Civilians, if you will, not people like pundits like you and me.
But
I don't know about the trans thing.
Aren't all of these things kind of connected? Like, Anthony Fauci has zero credibility, and that thing is going to come undone in a big way. So we're not listening to authority figures. We're not listening to the so-called science gods. We're looking for common sense coupled with science and coupled with facts, but we're not listening and giving the credibility. You can go ahead and try to smear people like you used to. And try to smear you and destroy you, try to smear me and destroy me. I don't think it works. I don't think any of this stuff, I think it's all coming undone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree or not?
You should say that. I don't know. I would like to say yes, because I've generally believed that you don't fight when somebody calls you a racist all the time. It's like, you know, I don't get out there and say, oh, no, because who are you going to persuade? The people who want to believe that about you are determined to believe it. And your fans, the people who know you, they don't believe it to begin with. They don't need to hear you take on, you know, these crazies who use those terms indiscriminately. So I just long believe there's no moving people on things like that. I do think that these terms, you know, bigotry, whether it has to do with gender, sexuality, race, what have you, they've been completely diluted to the point now where they have far less meaning. And that's a shame, right? They used to actually mean something where they could change people's hearts and minds. They don't anymore. But I do think that the regular civilians, like my neighbors, let's say, you know, people who I live next to when I'm at the Jersey Shore in the summer, they are still afraid of these very loud woke warriors. And it's a small group. I think they think that they're bigger than they are. I think it's 10% of the population, if that. And I do think people like us who have these microphones, if we don't start being louder and louder and encouraging people to push back against this nonsense in their schools, at their corporations, in their sports, in their media, in their Hollywood choices, then we're going to lose. Then that 10% is going to grow and grow and grow and become even more powerful.
Megan Kelly, always good to talk to you. I'd love to spend some time. I hope you are following what's going on with the State Department in Afghanistan. It is a crime and needs to be exposed. Thank you so much, Megan. You can hear her on her podcast, or now you can hear her on Channel 111. It's the Triumph Channel. If you're listening to us on XM Sirius now, just keep it where it is. She'll be on right after this program. Megan, thank you so much. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Glenn. Lots of love.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
Emily Miller, she's a journalist. She's also a former State Department Deputy Press Secretary under the Bush administration. And she joins us now. You can find her at emilypostnews.com, or you can follow her on Twitter at Emily Miller. She has been detailing what's going on in Afghanistan, and I've been reading her every day. She's very good, Emily. Thank you for your coverage and your honesty. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm so glad to talk to you. I've been following every detail of what you've been doing to help get these people out, and I'm just glad we're all doing what we can.
Yeah. Everybody's, I mean, it is really a nice thing to see. I don't see any infighting. I don't see anybody, you know, taking victory, except for the State Department, taking victory laps. Everybody is just working together and trying their best to do what they can, and we're all kind of putting our pieces together, which is nice.
It really is. And I mean, we'll look at this, I think, in history as two things. One, the greatest failure of the United States government in history, by far. But number two, the strength of the American people. While our president, President Biden, is so weak, And because of him, the United States government fell apart and can't do its job. But in that void came all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the special forces operators who started this, saying, we'll go ourselves. And many of them have, and many of them are planning on it. We'll go ourselves and get our guys out. And it's, as you said, the NGOs, it's all these veterans who are taking in the names, planning their getting out in aircraft or however. And people like me, we started this group called Project Exodus, a special forces operator and I did. I didn't even know him a week ago. And so now Project Exodus has joined with, we have, I don't know how many names have come into us now, and we're tracking them all. We're getting their passport numbers for the Americans. We're getting their SIV status for the others. And we are talking to all of them every single day to give them safety information and plan rescues. However, just as you said, I think it was 2 days ago, we consolidated all of us from Pineapple Express is the best known one, our group, but there's tons of them across the country. And we share intel, we share names, we share databases. This is the strength of the American people. This is what I want. I hope that the people in Afghanistan see that even though the government, our government, has failed so miserably, you can always trust the strength of the American people. And I also hope our enemies around the world see that.
I do too.
See that we are not weak. Our president is weak. We are strong, and we will always do our job.
That is a great, great point. You know, when Russia planned all kinds of invasions in America, the one thing they never had on the board was an invasion from Mexico through Texas, because they knew Texans would stand up. And right. I hope that our enemies see that here, that no matter what our government says about us, it's not true.
It's not true. The weakness of this president does not have nothing to do with the weakness of the American people and our enemies, who all of them were in Afghanistan, the Russians, the Chinese. They know. They see this. I mean, they see this because they see Americans on the ground there fighting. They see us helping the Northern Resistance Force, giving them intel, helping them. Unfortunately, it's been a horror what's happened to them.
Yeah,
because the Pakistan, our weapons that we're funding in Pakistan have been used against the Northern forces. It's shameful, but our enemies know, the Taliban, ISIS-K, they know Americans are in there, and we're not walking away from this. They can put up that stupid photo with the green night vision goggles of the last person leaving. That's going to show failure for us. The success is going to be that we stayed and we went back, and we are going to get these people out of there.
So help me out on a couple of things. Let's start with the number of Americans that are there. Chuck Schumer just said yesterday, every American that wants to be out is out. Well, I know we have over 100 ourselves that are in safe houses and ready to get out, wanting to get out, been sitting there with airplanes for a week now and can't get out.
Yep. I know your planes. I just want to focus for one second on the planes. I want people to understand it's not just about the six planes. I think that's gotten somewhat confused in the media. It's not just about six planes and your people. It's about that this is a really hard country to get out of.
Yeah.
I don't think this is not France where you can just walk across the border to another country. This is a really complicated country. And the best way that we can get these Americans out is by planes. We can't get them out of planes because the State Department won't let us have the right documentations to fly to other countries. So once those six planes start, then we can start putting more people on planes. And like you said, all the people who are in state houses in safe houses, people who are stuck in Kabul can't go to the airport because the U.S. closed the airport.
Right.
So the bigger goal here is to get everyone to fly out. Unfortunately, if this continues like this with the State Department, we're going to have to start using land routes. And that's so much more dangerous and it's so much more difficult. But as you said, just for hard numbers, the numbers that I keep hearing, and I heard this from somebody inside the Pentagon who saw a database from the State Department, is 1,000. And another source who has been working on this rescue since a little bit earlier, a couple of weeks earlier than I have, had it at 750. So the government knows it's 750 to 1,000. I mean, I know that's still a big gap for American citizens. Like, you should know it to the number. But it's that many people.
So we have we've been having problems with the State Department, as you said, and as I just tried to explain to the audience a few minutes ago, what that paperwork is and how easy it is to give. What do you think? You've been in the State Department before. Why would they be doing this?
I worked. This is why Afghanistan means so much to me. Is I worked at the State Department in the Bush administration, Bush 43. I was Secretary Powell's press secretary and then Secretary Rice's, Condoleezza Rice. And with them, I went to Afghanistan. This is 2003, 2004, 2005. And it was so hopeful. It was so hopeful. I remember going, my best memory is going with Colin Powell to see women register to vote for the first time in their lives. They had a whole place where they got to register to vote for the first time. They were so excited. I mean, it was so hopeful. And those of us who are part of it, were just, you know, our military has lost many lives, but it was for the greater good of going after people who did 9/11, the terrorists who did 9/11 and Al-Qaeda, and then giving these people freedom in those early years. And now, and a lot of the same people work at the State Department, there are a lot of good, brave people at the State Department who've taken jobs
Yes.
over the years that I would never take in mm-hmm. countries I would never live in, and they live in them, and they are great. I don't even want to blame them. I don't want to blame them. It's Biden's fault. It's President Biden's fault. It all falls on him. He's in hiding. It's hard to blame a man who's not there. 100%, because all it takes is ordering them what to do. No matter what, State Department does not operate by itself. It's a political agency. Blinken was nominated or given his job by President Biden. He takes orders from President Biden. Everyone under him takes orders from him. That's how it operates. I've been calling all my friends inside the State Department, the ones who are still there, the Career Foreign Service, and they are frustrated and they're doing everything they can to give me information that they can. But what I can see from the inside is it's just a total failure. Just they fell through the cracks. It is incompetence. And I'll tell you, when I posted on Twitter, I think last Thursday, there are six planes grounded who can't get out of Afghanistan because the State Department. Well, guess who suddenly wanted to return my call? The spokesman of the State Department, Ned Price. Suddenly. And look, I have nothing against Ned. He and I got along great. And it was a very cordial conversation. And I said to him, and he asked me to speak confidentially, and I want to keep to that. And he told me how many Americans were actually on the plane. And he explained to me that the problem for them was that they, as you've heard them say, is that it's a mix of people. It's Americans plus and green card holders. But it's also people with
FSA. We have, Emily, we have vetted those are our planes. Those were our people. I mean, other groups also helped find them. They were on our planes. We had the manifest and everyone's name went through OFACT. Every single name. The State Department has a manifest. We understand that. Those were about half of them were persecuted Christians. We vet these guys better than the federal government does. That's why, I mean it. That's why the Nazarene Fund is partners with countries like Australia. We can get the Prime Minister of Australia on the phone at any time. They have said, we'll take your people. Anytime you need somebody, we will take them. Because we know who they are. It's a bullcrap lie.
Well, let me ask you, though, because this is I'd like to clear this up with you. He said do you control all six of those planes? Because
no,
his
four.
Understanding, okay, four. All right, got it. Let me just tell you this, and I'll break confidence just a teeny bit. I'm not going to break confidence in anything factual and get anyone in trouble, but just on this part, because I really think it'll go down as the example of how incompetent this government is. Now, Ned is a spokesman. Obviously, he's with Blinken all the time, so he knows he knows all the intel, but he's not the guy who's operating Afghanistan. There's a whole desk for that. Mm-hmm. I've worked with them. They know their stuff. He said to me that the reason for the holdup was all the mixed people, but he said the reason was that they didn't have a phone number for the New York Times operator. And I mean, who's operating the plane that has New York Times people on it? And I said, I don't think
not our phone. That's not our plane.
Yeah, that's a different one. And it kind of made me curious if this whole thing is being kept secret by the State Department because it's a reporter. And it also made me curious. Actually, make me probably likely that the whole media kept that quiet last week, and I broke their silence, but because it's reporters. But that'll go down, and we'll look at that in history. But he said that they didn't have a contact, and they've been trying all night to contact people who had
explained. Oh my gosh, we have somebody. Oh my gosh.
I know. It's going to drive you crazy. Here's what's going to drive you even more crazy. So one of the guys on our team, Project Express, is in direct contact with Conair. Is that how you say
it? Camair.
Camair. I've only ever texted it.
That's right.
Direct contact with the rep for Camair. And he's the one who's actually giving the real information. Nothing different. Like, the question of like where they can land, the process of the documents that they don't have, the destination documents, and you know all that. And just it's that issue. But I get back to him and I said, we really need to do some help here. State Department needs contact for the operators of each of those planes. And he said to me, what does he mean by operators? And I was like, I just actually assumed that was a phrase you knew. And this guy's special forces, he's overseas. And he's our direct contact with the airlines. And he said, it's just one guy at Cam Air. And I'm like, well, do you have a phone number for him? And so he texts me, I won't say his name on air. He texts me the guy's cell phone number. And I call back to Ned State Department. I'm like, it's this man at the airlines. Here's his cell. And he's like, oh, great. Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh. Emily, it is. I mean, they have. I'd like to talk to you off the air. I need to share some stories with you because this is I think that this is criminal. What's going on. Thank you so much, Emily, for everything that you are doing. I really appreciate it. Thank you for Project Exodus. It's just good to see people doing what is right. You can follow her at emilypostnews.com or on Twitter, Emily Miller. And she is one of the creators of Project Exodus, getting people out and finding them and getting communication from them. So I am trying to eat healthier, and I am. But the thing is, I don't like healthy food. I don't like any of it. You've heard of a fat suit, right? I mean, there's got to be. When are we getting a skinny suit? Something that will make me look skinny, because I just want treats all the time. I grew up in a bakery, for the love of Pete. The bad news is no skinny suit is coming. You actually have to do the work, blah, blah, blah. That's why I am eating Built Bars. It satisfies my sweet tooth, but it's a protein bar, but not like, you know, that's like eating stuff at the bottom of my chalkboard usually. This is 100% real chocolate. It's low carb, low sugar. If I'm eating a protein bar as a treat, come on, you gotta know it's good. And I am. Mint brownie, cookies and cream, the new flavors that are coming out all the time, they're fantastic. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code BECK15 for 15% off your order. Your mouth is going to water just looking at them. Trust me, BuiltBar.com, promo code BECK15.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Benghazi Annex security team member, the founder of Shadow Warriors Project, and now heading up some evacuation efforts in Afghanistan, the one and only Mark Geist, known as Oz. Hey, Mark, how are you, man?
Good. How are you?
I am good. I am, unfortunately, I thought of you and Benghazi while the just the chaos was happening at the Kabul airport. How similar did that give you any flashbacks, any kind of feeling like, oh boy, they're doing it again?
You know, it did. And what really kind of hit home as it was progressing was I thought back to the people who were in charge of our government at that time, and the in charge of the State Department were, you know, Ambassador Rice. I mean, those same people are now doing the same thing once again, and they didn't learn from the first time where they failed to do what was right and to send help and the appropriate help instead of always trying to do this. I kind of call it that fish handshake with everybody.
Yeah.
And that's their approach to foreign policy is we're going to shake your hand and we're going to try to, you know, negotiate it out when you're dealing with a group of people who do not negotiate. They believe in power. They believe in strength and they believe in force. And that's the enemy that we have at our gates in Afghanistan. And now because of the way we pulled out of there, I believe we have to be ready for it here at home because we have a southern border that's not secure.
Jeez. Lindsey Graham said the other day he thinks we're going to have to go back into Afghanistan because he said this is going to be the center of global terrorists. And I mean, we've only made them stronger and things are going to start happening around the world and here that he thinks we'll be back within 5 years.
I think we'll be back within the next 45 to 90 days.
Holy cow. Why do you say that?
I just think with the way that we have pulled out, that we didn't leave any type of agreement. We didn't force them to come to the table with and be accountable to not just America and Americans, but to the world as a whole. And now we're trying to treat the Taliban, who we forced out through combat out of Afghanistan, and we've allowed them back, and now we're treating them as the official government when truly the official government is still fighting up in the Panjshir Valley. At least hopefully they still are to this day.
Our weapons are being used against them, and so they're having a hard time standing, but they are still standing. Why do you say we'll go back in? I mean, it's the same people that got us out, and I mean, what is going to change? At the Pentagon, State Department, White House, what do you see coming that would change that?
I think what's going to happen, what is going to happen from Afghanistan itself and with what's going on there behind the scenes and what we won't see until we have brave Afghans who are going to get information out about what truly is the Taliban is going to be doing to people. Right. And I think it's going to be so horrendous that it's going to require the world to stand up and take heed of what's going on there.
In some ways, I hope you're right. I mean, I don't want to go back in there, but I mean, I don't know if you heard about the police officer, the female police officer that was pregnant in front of her 13-year-old boy. She was brutally killed, and then they cut her brain out with knives and screwdrivers in front of him. And the world is not really paying attention, just not paying attention. And that's, I can guarantee you, not an isolated incident.
No, not at all. And, you know, we have American citizens who, in essence, are being held hostage by the Taliban in Moza Sharif. I mean, you know that we have airplanes up there. There are airplanes, I think the Nazarene Project through you have helped fund that are being held and restricted. And, you know, it's, and those people are, that are manifested for those flights are American citizens. And they're not being allowed to leave. And we're not doing anything. And we have a president who's on vacation, and we have a vice president who's trying to campaign for Gavin Newsom, who has run California into the ground.
We're talking to Mark Geist, known as Oz. He was a part of the Benghazi annex security team. You might remember him from the movie 13 Hours, a remarkable, remarkable story. He is now helping with evacuation efforts in Afghanistan. So you say, and I know, and we both know, there are plenty of Americans we have left behind. There is nothing more dishonorable than what we have done in Afghanistan. Losing is one thing. Being dishonorable in our loss is entirely a different thing. Tell me what you're doing in Afghanistan.
So my nonprofit is called Shadow Warriors Project, and it came out of what happened to me and in Benghazi. And, you know, as private security contractors, we have a workman's comp policy when we get injured or killed, and that's it. My pay stopped the day I left the country of Libya, which was on September 12th. And we started this because we have, in the past 20 years, we've had over 5,000 private military contractors killed, over 30,000 injured in the war on terror. And they've had to depend on a workman's comp policy, and no one's there to have their back. And especially those who are in the security side of things that are facing the day-to-day threats, just as our military are. And we wanted to make sure that they didn't struggle when they got injured or killed. They didn't have to worry about that. And that's what really started our program. And since then, over the last 7 years, we've really grown where we have a lot of different apparatus. We have a canine program where we get service dogs to both contractors and veterans. A lot of times they're one and the same. And then we have a canine therapy program where we bring in 8 to 12 combat vets, pair them, we introduce them to Christ. We pair them with the dogs for a week. We use the dogs to teach them how to manage their anxiety and stress. And then we have peer-to-peer counseling. And that's kind of the crux of our, that's our foundation. But then when Afghanistan, went awry, we knew that we had contractors that were overseas that were stuck there. And so we wanted to get involved, and we've partnered with a lot of different veteran service organizations because we knew that the government wasn't going to be there. I mean, we've all experienced that before. So we have partnered with other groups and are working tirelessly every day to, since it started, to get people out. And luckily, through our connections that we've had with other military personnel, our experience that we've gained over the last 20 years of fighting this enemy, we've been very successful.
Can you tell me, because I was reading about it, and it says we're partnering with other veteran service organizations in deconflicting and supporting each other in assisting American citizens, green card holders, pastors, missionaries, as well as Afghan allies from being left behind. What do you mean deconflicting?
Well, is making, we're help coordinating who's working in different areas, so we're not wasting time or resources by having multiple groups doing the same thing, trying to help with connecting the right people to each other that can help support one another instead of be working in areas that would cause consternation between them, just with surrounding countries, with coordinating with other countries where we can get the refugees into. And, you know, we've done this pretty much without the help of any government groups whatsoever. It's just American citizens who have worked with the government and military personnel who are now veterans that saw a need. And I mean, it's very similar. I call it Operation Dunkirk, in a sense.
It's exactly, you know, right.
It's people taking care of those that are getting left behind.
You know, I was talking to Emily Miller about a half an hour ago, and she said she hopes that the people of Afghanistan see, and I think the rest of the world needs to see it, especially our enemies. Don't confuse our government with the people. The people are not disorganized. The people get things done. We still are the roll our sleeves up and get the damn job done, no matter what the odds. It's our government that has given up on really not just the people left behind, but I think given up on America. They, you know, Biden doesn't even have the agreement in Kosovo is coming up here in the next couple of weeks. He doesn't even, they're not even engaged on it. The last president worked really hard to get a peace agreement there. It's coming up. We're not even engaged. It's like they've given up on America being anything other than a has-been.
And I can agree with you more. I mean, it's, you know, we've given up on Afghanistan. And like you said, we're giving up on Kosovo and Eastern Europe. All for the sake of what? I mean,
right.
For the sake of money, for the sake of, you know, like Afghanistan, we left behind not only the people we've left behind, and we left behind, it's estimated anywhere between $900 billion and $2.4 trillion in precious minerals that are instrumental in building circuit boards and computer equipment and communications equipment. And all sources I've talked to, the Chinese are in there already trying to make deals. The Russians are already back in there. I have no doubt that the Russian intel services, the GRU, are assisting.
We've had operators going in trying to help that say they have seen the Russians on the ground. And today the story broke that China is looking at Bagram as a destination for all of their, you know, heavy equipment, if you will.
Well, and why would you not? I mean, Bagram sits in probably the most defensible place in Afghanistan. You've got the high ground. You've got multiple runways. It's a large facility. And why we didn't
at least blow it up?
That is our at a minimum that, but start before that, Glenn.
Oh, I know.
Why didn't we use that as our area of helping get out the Afghans? And
we still could be flying. We still could be flying the Great Tails out of that Air Force base. Easy.
Yes.
Easy.
And we wouldn't have had to put unvetted people into America. We wouldn't have had to need the use or the support of other countries, because Bagram's big enough. We could have isolated people that want to come to America. Yep. We could have ran them through the terror database. We could have done everything that needed to be done. And I mean, I hate to talk about what could have been done, but we have to look at what could have been done to understand why we're in the mess we're in.
Yes. Mark Geis, you can follow him at markgeis.com or Mark Geis SWP, that Shadows Warrior Project. Any way we can help you, Mark, with what you're doing, I can't thank you enough for what you guys are doing on the ground.
You know, the thing right now is we've got people that are... We have people in safe houses. We've got American citizens and green card holders that we are trying to get out. You know, it's we'd love to help get all the others out, and we're going to continue with that as well.
Well,
right now it's life that we need to get out of here.
I know. And as soon as our planes start to fly, we have four on the tarmac now. We're waiting for the State Department to get the hell out of our way. And we've got 10 others lined up. So I hope we can... partner with you in any way that we can just to help people. Thank you so much, Mark.
Hey, Glenn, thank you so much.
You bet. God bless.